Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so really quickly, before I get to today and what's playing out, just a quick look back at yesterday. Now, the story going into day one of the Masters was Bryson DeChambeau. The story coming out of day one, though, was Tiger Woods. And it feels completely insane to say that. I mean, first of all, Paul Casey deserves some respect. I mean, the guy did shoot a 65. The guy was sitting atop the leaderboard when play ended yesterday. He was the runner-up at this year's PGA Championship. So we're not talking about some hack, and we're not saying that that's not something, because it is. And then you've got Dylan Fratelli, who finished off his first round this morning and carded a 65. So no disrespect intended. And yes, whenever somebody says, no disrespect intended, somebody is about to get disrespected. But I'm just going to go ahead and say what everybody else is just thinking anyway. Who the hell is Dylan Fratelli? And why the hell wasn't anybody watching when homeboy jumped a fence, snuck onto these hallowed grounds, and went eagle, birdie, birdie, birdie on 13 through 16? I mean, that is brass as hell. Whoever you are, Dennis, Dylan, this dude. But again, yesterday, what yesterday was really about was the absence of patrons and the presence of Tiger Woods, the defending champ, who had spent the past year or so playing like anything but a Masters champ. A guy who, frankly, I felt like had a better chance of missing the cut than successfully defending his title. That's how badly this guy's played this year, when he's played at all. This is a guy who had not finished in the top 10 of a tourney since January. He had played four majors since he won that green jacket. His best finish was a tie for 21st. He also had a 37th place finish. He missed a couple of cuts. In other words, the guy was a disaster. So going into yesterday, he was practically an afterthought, and deservedly so. I mean, think about that for a minute. Tiger Woods being an afterthought at Augusta National. Tiger Woods, the defending champion, being an afterthought at Augusta National. So, knowing all of that, when this guy was going on and on Tuesday about contending, it sounded like the guy was begging, like a guy drowning in a sea of his own myopia. I mean, this guy contending was about as likely as this guy reaching for a check. And we know that's never going to happen. Just to ask those Navy SEALs that he broke bread with. I mean, say what you want about Bryson DeChambeau loading up, bulking up, smashing protein shakes, eating everything he sees. He at least never deluded himself enough to think that he could actually be a Navy SEAL, like Eldrick. And speaking of delusion, Eldrick saying earlier this week that he could contend seemed like the most delusional thing ever. Like that loser who peaked in high school, who can't stop talking about how he manned the hell up in that league championship game as a senior. And it's just counting the years until his next high school reunion so he can relive all those great moments all over again and try to mack on some of those high school hotties that knew him 50 pounds ago when he still had a full head of lettuce. Oh, and by the way, Kat, great job with yours. The lettuce, I mean. Or at least we thought so. Until he took his hat off. Oh. Anyway, coming in, it seemed like he was one of those old guys. Hit the cat. He seemed like one of those old guys that they roll out for the ceremonial first shot. Or at best, one of the old guys who is still allowed to compete at the Masters, but nobody expects to actually win. You know, like Sandy Lyle, as an example. He shows up yesterday with the fit of the day, looking damn fresh, in suspenders, and a pair of Scottish flag kicks. What an absolute baller this guy was. And honestly, going into yesterday, it felt like Tiger was going to have to rock some suspenders or some plus fours to get any kind of run whatsoever. As evidence of how old this guy really is, I'm not going to point you to the back of his head. That's not really fair. I'm going to say, as evidence of how old this guy is, he was in a group with a guy who was born after he won his first Masters. That's how old this guy is. But damn, if the cat didn't go out and back it up. starting on the back nine. He put together three straight pars, and then he did what he does. On the back nine at Augusta, birdie, par, birdie, birdie. Like, this old dude who could not get any part of his game working this year suddenly had the entire thing working. The senior citizen could suddenly swing it again. Like I've always said, golf is witchcraft. Man, that dude was a freaking sorcerer. Because that was some actual magic. Like, maybe there really is something special about Augusta National and his relationship to Augusta National. Because this guy went from being a busted up train wreck for almost an entire year to being Tiger freaking Woods. Like, how the hell is that even possible? Seriously, how is that possible? Whenever we have seen this guy in 2020, he has looked horrible. And honestly, we didn't see that much of him because he either wasn't playing or he already finished up his rounds before the TV broadcast started. He was that much of a non-factor. And then yesterday, he wasn't just a factor. He was the factor. 15 greens in regulation. 10 of 14 fairways in regulation. No three putts. But the most impressive thing about his round to me was not his putting, not his iron play, not what he did off the tee. It was his overall mindset and approach. My man was calm. He was calm. He was peaceful. There were no F-bombs. There were no Tigers!
Tiger!
God!
Oh, well.
No. Yeah, well, oh, well, huh? Look, you're not going to win the Masters with one good round, but man, that was an impressive round. Really impressive round. Have to tip my cap to the big cat because that was a masterful performance. A masterful performance that, frankly, I would have bet anything that he no longer had in him. But he did. Now, if his round was calm and peaceful, my man Bryson was anything but. The guy who showed up in Georgia looking to take apart that course had himself a roller coaster ride yesterday. I mean, the build-up to yesterday was all about Bryson. The fact that he got stronger this year has now reached, like, Jerome Bettis is from Detroit levels of coverage. So it was good to see this guy finally tee it up so we could talk about something other than his diet or his fitness regimen. And to see what kind of damage he was going to do to Augusta. And we found out pretty quickly. The scientist was not going to take the course apart the way we expected, the way he expected. In fact, the course started to punch back. Bryson started on 10. He blasted a 327-yard three-wood off the tee, and then he missed a six-foot birdie putt. Then he placed not one, but two. Drives on 11 in the woods. Then he missed another birdie putt on 12. Then came 13, which is really significant. 13 was going to be the first par 5 that he would face. He had been talking about the par 5s at Augusta. He'd been talking a lot about the par 5s. This is a guy who went on record and said, Augusta is really, quote, a par 67 because I can reach all the par 5s in two. No problem. Like, that's an amazing quote. That's an amazing statement. I mean, that's a guy who is cocksure. That's a guy who's arrogant. That's a guy who's confident. Hey, man, I'm fine with you saying that. I actually love that you said it, but you better back it up. But then when it came to 13, he was talking a huge game about what he could do there. You know, cut the corner on the dog leg, leave a pitching wedge to the green, hit it to the 14th fairway, and attack it from there. That's not what happened. He dead snap hooked it left. Less than 300 yards into the trees and straw. Then played a second shot that was no better than the first, back into the straw, from the straw to the bushes, played a provisional, went into the creek, found his original ball, had to take a drop for an unplayable lie, played that, and it all adds up to a double bogey 7.
Double.
The guy who had been talking about dismantling Augusta suddenly looked like a Muni hack on a goat track. Into the straw, into the bushes, into the water, and then finally, ultimately, into the hole. But credit to the big dog. He did bounce back. He had a par on 14. Birdies on 15 and 16. He finished even on the back nine. He played the front nine and 2 under. And he opens up with a 70. So 2 under par in the real world. 3 over par in Bryson world. Hey, one more thing to mention. It also tied Larry Mize Shout out to Larry Mize, 62 years old and firing a 2-under opening round. Man, that's awesome. You know what's even more awesome? Bryson averaged 335 off the tee yesterday. Larry averaged 247 off the tee. And they had the same score. I'm not here to crack on Bryson. I love the guy. I'm not even here to say that the golfing gods got the revenge for all the gum bumping he had been doing. I'm not saying that at all. Here's what I am saying. At worst, golf is boring. I love golf. I'm just saying, at worst, it can be boring. There was nothing boring about Bryson's act yesterday. All in, all action, and whether it's good or it's bad, and there was some good. In fact, there was a lot of good on the front nine. But whether there's good or bad, it's amazing for everybody. And I love the way the guy attacked it. Could have played it safe on 13, settled for a bird, stayed aggressive, went for an eagle, ends up with a double bogey. And finally, if you were looking to roll up on this guy and see if you can maybe hook him or that he might be bitter or angry or defend himself, it's not like that at all. He's like, listen, this is my plan, and I'm sticking with my plan.
At the end of the day, you know, I should have been smarter and hit it out, took my medicine and hit it on the green, but I'm greedy. Sometimes I can get a little greedy, and I like taking risks. You got to take risks to win tournaments.
Greed is good. So he's not backing down or changing his style, and I respect it, nor should he. I mean, I'm all about this guy. I'm all about what he brings to it physically and mentally. Bad for the sport. This dude is one of the best things that ever happened to the sport. Let it rip, B. Let it rip. Stay greedy. So, clones, let me start this week by asking you a question. What do you want when you're craving protein or you need more energy? I'll tell you what you don't want. Bars, sugary snacks, energy drinks. No, you know what you want? You want beef, pure and simple. So where is the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Not shriveled, not dry, not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. So why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. So make sure you look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality that you are purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares Old Trapper. What's your beef? Kenny Blakeney is the head coach at Howard. He joins me now. Kenny, good to have you on. How are you?
What's up, Jim? How you doing, man? It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your show.
Kenny, it is an honor and a pleasure to have you on this show. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you. Listen, there's so much I want to talk to you about. We're less than 2 weeks away from the start of the season, but bring me up to date. How are you doing, and what's the vibe like around the program right now?
Jim, to be honest with you, man, it's a little bit like a crapshoot. You know, right now, from what I understand, there's probably 26 teams across the country that are paused because of COVID. And here at Howard, we're getting tested three times a week. We get a PCR test done, and we get a rapid test done on Monday and Wednesday, Friday. So we get six results a week. And so far, so good. We haven't had any positive tests from our program. But it just seems like, you know, universities that are currently on campus, we're remote right now, so we only have three sport teams on campus. There's no other teams. Students on campus are getting hit the most. And we definitely think there's going to be some pauses throughout the season and some missed games. So it's a little bit of a crapshoot. It's up and down, but right now everything's cool.
I appreciate that response. In fact, I would look at it just that way. Kenny Blakeney is joining us. So if we talk about the basketball aspect, I mean, what an unusual offseason in that over the summer, McCorm Maker, a five-star recruit, announced that he was committing to Howard over programs like UCLA and Kentucky. He could have also gone to the NBA. So what kind of emotions did you have when he made it official?
It was shocking. I thought we were in there with McCorm for a good time. I think, Jim, the thing that we didn't know and that we had questions about was if he would go to the NBA or not, or maybe even to go to Australia, like LaMelo Ball and the young man from Texas, Hampton. those were all things that were on the table. But I knew if those options were not the options for him, that we had just as good a chance as UCLA or Kentucky. He came to campus, he enjoyed himself, and, you know, we have a relationship with his guardian and mentor that goes back a number of years. So we were really diligent and confident that he would be a Howard Bison.
Kenny Blakeney is joining us. All right, for those who do not know, like, what is he like as a person and as a player?
As a person, he's really quiet. But I think he's a guy that really observes everything and takes it all in before he kind of, you know, gets outside of his shell. But he's really smart. He's really bright. His cousin, Thon Maker, plays for the Detroit Pistons. He has another cousin, Mature Maker, that plays for the G League team of the Houston Rockets. So he's been around a certain degree of professionalism for a while. As a player, he is so physical and a hard worker. I was really shocked of how physical he is at 6'11", 7 feet, and 230 pounds. He loves contact, which is awesome, and it's great for our team. He's a guy that wakes up at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5:30 in the morning. He's getting 500 shots up in the gym. You know, after that, he does his yoga, and he's on to lifting weights after that, and then he practices with our team. So there's a certain degree of professionalism about him, and he's really driven and understands what he's trying to achieve.
Kenny Blakeney is joining us. You know, that's a really good background for the young man, and I think it gives the listener an idea of what kind of person he is. You know, he talked also about how much the culture of your program and of Howard meant to him. What kind of conversations then did you have with him during the process about the program and about the university?
Well, I think with our university, you know, we have a vice president elect, Kamala Harris, who's you know, an alum of class of 86, Thurgood Marshall, the first black Supreme Court justice, David Dinkins, the first black mayor of New York City. You know, you can go down the list of alums, Elijah Cummings, Chadwick Boseman. There's so many, like, you know, incredible alums that have walked on our campus that, you know, we call ourselves the Mecca. And we have a kind of a little bit of a logo for ourselves in the basketball program. We call ourselves the Dream Factory. Because we really feel like this is a place where your dreams can come true. So it was more him getting to campus, I think, seeing what this place was about. In terms of our basketball program, I think he really weighed a lot on my pedigree and our staff's pedigree. Being able and lucky and fortunate to play at Duke University for Coach Mike Krzyzewski, having a chance to play at the Master Catholic High School for Morgan Wooten, the places I've been, my mentors, Tommy Amaker, Mike Bray at Notre Dame. You know, I think it was more so he understood my background and felt really comfortable with who I was as a person and who I am as a coach.
You have amazing pedigree, and I want to talk to you about that, Kenny, in 1 minute. I want to ask you one more thought about this, though, or one more question, a big picture question. What does this commitment to you and your program mean to not just you and the program, but HBCUs overall?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. I think that, you know, for HBCUs and specifically for Howard University, you know, when I was at Duke, I had a chance to see a little bit how that worked with the success of the basketball program. And there it meant more applicants applying for your university, which meant more money for applications, but also you got a greater selection of candidates to choose from that had, you know, higher GPAs and higher SATs. And that's really good for, like, the Princeton Reviews or the New York, you know, Times academic rankings. Secondly, I think you get a chance for bookstore sales. You know, bookstore sales will increase with McCoy being here. More people want to, I think, be attached to our brand and understanding that the culture and what he brings to our university and our basketball program. You know, we'll have a chance to have a lot of our games nationally televised this year, which is incredible. And then the last thing, I think it brings in a lot of corporate sponsorships and those kind of partnerships. So there's a real kind of like avalanche, I think, situation that comes from this, which is all totally positive, you know, for Howard. And I hope the momentum continues with HBCUs. I just saw that North Carolina A&T got a top 100 kid a couple of days ago. So the momentum and the change is starting to happen with this movement.
We're talking to Kenny Blakeney. Now, I know you don't want to make it about you, and we're talking about the program, but we did mention your pedigree. You go back, you were an All-American and a Gatorade Player of the Year at DeMatha. What was it like to be a part of that program and to play for the great Morgan Wootten?
Yeah, Jim, thank you for allowing me to talk about Coach Wootten. He's such a, when Coach Wootten retired, he was the winningest high school coach in the history of high school basketball. He's one of a few high school coaches that are in the Naismith Hall of Fame. And what a guy to, learn my high school basketball from. The most fundamentally sound coach. He's like your granddad when I played for him. You know, he never swore, never really raised his voice, was sarcastic as hell, quick, witty. I was just such... very lucky and blessed to have a seat in his classroom. A little bit, Jim, I feel like the Black Forrest Gump a little bit, where, I've just positioned myself in the right place at the right times around the right people.
What a great analogy that is, Kenny. And then as part of that, you go to Duke, you play for Coach K, you win a pair of national titles. What did you take away from your time with Coach K?
I think with Coach K, he and I have such a good relationship. He's been a guy that has been a mentor for me, while I was at Duke and certainly while I've been assistant coach and even more so now as a head coach. A guy that has, being a head coach, I know your time is limited, but he'll reach out on a Saturday or a random day and just call and spend 30 minutes on the phone with me, which is unbelievable. Coach K loves Duke, and, being there is kind of giving me the blueprint of what Howard University can be. He's a guy that's a huge Howard University fan, understands the history and the tradition and the academics of this place. We're a top 80 university, and we're a private university in Washington, D.C. So he really gets the whole academic private institution in Washington, D.C., part of what we're about at Howard.
Kenny, it would stand a reason that I would ask you about Coach Wootten. It would stand a reason that I would ask you about Coach K, but I do have to ask you about Lefty Drizel. You coached under him, and you've said that he used to fire the staff nearly every single day. I mean, what a character and what a great coach. What was that like, and what were those coaches' meetings like with him?
Jim, I'm laughing when you say that because Coach Drizel would call me before he came to work and say I'm in the office at 8:30, he would call at like 8:15. He literally would talk for 15 minutes when his drive in, kind of discussing what took place yesterday or what was going to take place today. And I would see his Cadillac. He drove these Cadillacs all the time. He's a guy that was, Coach Lefty would wear pinky rings, fur coats, and alligator shoes and drive Cadillacs.
So good.
So I'd see the big Cadillac coming down. He'd park it in a spot. He'd still be on the cell phone, coming from the parking lot, walking through the office, passing my office, on the phone, and we're still having a conversation. Then he would sit down in his chair, and he would yell into the office and be like, "Kenny, look here 1 minute." But we would literally, as a staff, sit in the staff room from 9 o'clock until about 3:30 or 4:00, and all of us on a daily basis. Would probably, and every assistant coach that ever worked for Lefty probably got fired every day. And Lefty would just kind of, you would say something he didn't like or you would do something that he wouldn't want done, and he'd just be like, "Oh, Kenny, I'm going to fire your ass today, Kenny. Your ass will get fired." So that was a left-hander, man. What a character and what a blessing to the game he was.
Kenny, that is so awesome. What a great story that is. I especially love that part. Like, this guy, you want to talk about style. I mean, how much respect did you have for the fact that he would roll in that caddy with his fur coat and his pinky rings and alligator shoes or whatever, man? You talk about being ahead of your time. How much style did he have, and what did you think when you saw him roll in to work like that?
Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and he was at the University of Maryland. So I was a fan and watching him, and for a guy that when during the time he was at the University of Maryland, the DMV, what we call the District Maryland and Virginia, was a heavily populated African-American community. So you have this guy who went to, you know, Duke University in, as an undergraduate, William & Mary as a for grad school, and he's the head coach at Maryland University, and he's walking around at, in Crocs and fur coats and pinky rings. But he's a guy that could really communicate with anybody and everybody on all walks of life. And that was the thing that was so, you know, fascinating about Coach Drizel. He just could connect with people in a way that not too many people could.
It's a really exciting time for Howard U. He is the head basketball coach there. He's entering his second season as head coach. And don't forget, either, he was a McDonald's All-American. He was a Gatorade Player of the Year in high school, a two-time national champ. You know, fingers crossed, Kenny, that things get better, things stay safe. I know it's a real challenge right now. It doesn't look great, but you can only do what you can do and do the right things. Hopefully you get that opener going on November 26th against Belmont. And, Kenny, finally good to have you on the show. Really appreciate the conversation.
Jim, thank you, man. This is something I can check off my bucket list. I've been a huge fan of yours all my life, man. Watching you and hearing you on the radio, you're one of the best, brother. Thank you so much.
All right, so Diego Sanchez is a UFC welterweight fighter, and he's been in the game a long time. 15 years in the UFC alone, 18 years overall as an MMA pro. I mean, mad respect for that kind of longevity. His first fight was way back in 2002. His most recent one was 7 weeks back. So this guy does stay sharp. And according to a tweet that he thumbed out only 2 nights ago, the 38-year-old was on his patio in Albuquerque doing, quote, energy work. Energy work, for those of you who do not know, is like a traditional flow exercise, which balances the energy and healing throughout your mind, your body, your soul. It sounds nice. Sounds effective. It sounds actually relaxing. It sounds like something important for somebody like that who's working a recovery regimen after 18 years in that game. Now, what followed in the same tweet is the reason I'm talking about Diego Sanchez. Not because of his exercise or his regimen, but because of the entirety of that post. Quote, I was doing energy work on my patio as a UFO flew right up on me. I called for my daughter. Quick, quick. She watched this thing hover only hundreds of feet away. Albuquerque is a trip. Sightings are regular here, but this bleep was contact tonight. It was obviously watching me. End quote. That's an all-time tweet right there. Now listen, I believe that we are not the only ones. I believe that it would be insanely arrogant to think that we are the only ones. What I'm having a little more trouble wrapping my head around is that while there are others, they want to come see that guy. I mean, Diego, no offense, but they made it a point that you were on their list. Like, they were looking at their little alien calendar and November 12th came up or whatever the date was. And like, you know what? Why don't we go pay Diego in Albuquerque a visit? I mean, that's an amazing tweet, right? There was contact. And before I could finish reading it, I had to make sure that I wasn't looking at Jose Canseco's feed. Because Josie, and that's a very Josie-type tweet, right? Remember Canseco was offering safaris in Vegas, guaranteeing customers that he would show them Bigfoot and Sasquatch on a bus ride through the desert. Remember that? So I had to make sure that I was not confusing Diego Sanchez with Jose Canseco, and I wasn't. It should also be noted, Diego's nightmare, or nickname, is the Nightmare, which seems pretty appropriate for a guy who was seeing a UFO only a couple of hundred feet away from him. So that's his actual nickname, but Twitter wants to change his nickname. Now they're glossing him the Hallucination. They're glossing him the Liar.
You're a liar.
I was going to say, he's lucky they're not glossing him. You're a liar and a felon. So come on over, aliens. I got nothing to hide. Like, the most common response that Fox Mulder, Diego Sanchez received was the de facto motto of the entire internet, something I already touched on. Picks or it didn't happen. Picks or it didn't happen, which is slang for if you cannot produce a picture, then what you're saying never happened. Diego saw that and responded to that. quote, shut up, which is always one of my favorite comebacks for anybody. Hey, Diego, what do you have to say to picks or it didn't happen? Shut up. That's something you say when you're like 12 years old to somebody else, like your little sister. Shut up. It happened. Quote, shut up. It happened. This is my 67th sighting this year. When you are blessed to witness what your eyes are seeing, you don't run for your phone. You just watch in awe of something defying physics. Man, my dude is good. Really good. Like, because on the one level, I actually respect that he doesn't reach for his blower. He knows he's seeing something special. He keeps it organic. And he's got proof right here. Right here. The mental hard drive. I also like the approach. The approach being pre-2005. Like, my man's got a nice analog way of living his life. Respect. However, on the other hand, if this really is your 67th viewing of a UFO this year, I don't know, man. Maybe you make an exception to your rule and snap a pic or set up a time-lapse camera on your patio. I mean, I don't know, something, anything. You know, in terms of wrecking the organic moment, you had 66 other of those moments, man. Reach for your phone. Reminds me of Tom DeLonge, the former guitarist of Blink 182. He spent the better part of the last decade trying to chase UFOs. He made national news earlier this year when the government did confirm that his UFO videos were indeed real. So, Diego, my man, I hate to be this guy, but do you know the difference between your UFO stories and Tom DeLonge's? A little thing called government confirmation. That and photos and video. So maybe if you want Twitter to stop glossing you the hallucination and throwing the pics or it didn't happen card in your face, just set up a camera or have your daughter bring her iPhone to the patio next time. I understand the aliens appear to be, quote, watching you, as you said in your tweet. Maybe you don't want to offend them by snapping a few pics. I get that. But they seem to like you a lot, man. If they've come around 67 times in 1 year, I'm guessing they like you. And they're going to keep coming. And if you take one selfie or you snap one pic, they're not going to say, oh, hell no. We're not going to Albuquerque anymore. Diego's off the list. So do me a favor, man. Cash in on that bond that you have with the other people and snap some photos, brother. Until then,
brother,
I'm going to side with the internet, something I rarely do. Picks or it didn't happen. Picks or it did not happen. It is your word against the internet's word, and I'm going to take the internet's word on this one. Picks or it did not happen. Some quick reaction before I get you to a sports update. Squirrel2 tweets, tell Diego, I'll call him before I visit next time. Yours, Sam Cassell. Man, you keep Sam Cassell's name out your mouth. No, I mean that, Jeff. Keep his name. You keep his name out your mouth. I love Sam Cassell. I don't play favorites. Sam Cassell is definitely one of my favorites. Jamie in Green Bay, did Diego Sanchez get into some of that shroom coffee? I don't know, but Hawk did. I meant to, but I didn't. At Mock Moda tweets, hey, Diego, I'm pretty sure that the instructions say to brew the mushroom coffee and not bake them into brownies. I'm not saying that it didn't happen. Yes, I am. Picks or it didn't happen. Picks or it didn't happen. I'm not saying, hey, man, homeboy's way out there because he thinks he saw a UFO. I mean, I'm pretty squarely on the side of the fence that says there are UFOs. I'm not trying to do some deep dive and move into the middle of the desert in Nevada and start hosting a radio show in the middle of the night. I just think it would be extremely naive and extremely arrogant to think that we're the only ones. In fact, I'm guessing that there are others, and they're smarter, and they're better looking, and they're more athletic. I'm pretty sure of that. I bet you did not know this. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? That said, we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you be ready for the unexpected and to review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms can help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. Having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the very best things that you can do for your home and your family. So what you want to do is install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom of your home. Once the alarms are installed, it's really important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. And remember, alarms do not last forever. They do have to be replaced at least every 10 years. If you can't remember the last time you replaced yours, it's time to get the unit replaced completely. Here's a great option, my favorite. First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. As mentioned, the alarm does provide 2-in-1 protection against both smoke and carbon monoxide, and I don't have to worry about that battery change for a decade. Lastly, make sure you take time to discuss home safety with your family. You want to plan and you want to practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year. For more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at your home with your family, go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. firstalert.com/fireprevention month. He is Rex Hoggard. Rex, what's going on? How are you?
November Masters. It feels just like April.
I was going to say, Rex, November Masters. There are a number of things to hit on, but first of all, set that stage for me. What is it like to be at Augusta National in November?
It's different. I mean, everyone has talked about it all week long. I was just telling someone, I walked out to 12 today and just kind of stood behind the tee, and you're getting a vantage point that, look, we never have the opportunity to get. And I've been lucky enough to play this golf course before, and I actually felt like it was cooler to be able to stand there and to watch these guys play that hole in these conditions on a fall day than it is to actually play it, because it is almost surreal. Though, I mean, it's weird. The part that throws me the most, Jim, is there aren't any ropes up like there are normally. And it's almost disconcerting because I'm so used to my life being conditioned to walk down the rope line. So it's an amazing experience.
It's got to be, I was going to say, just really surreal and really eerie. You know, it's one thing, Rex, to have Augusta National in November or the tournament in November, but what's it like not having patrons? What's that part of the experience been like?
That's been the biggest part by far, and I think players will talk about it. And I'm sure by the time we get to Sunday, it's going to be even more exaggerated because it's sort of the symphony of this tournament, right? You can tell by the cheers, not only did something good happen, but you can tell what hole it happened on and probably who did it. You know, that's how good it is to figure out. The tradition here just ranks above everything else. And it's weird, having been back on tour since June without fans, you would have thought that we sort of conditioned ourselves to the new normal. And by and large, I think the players and the rest of us have. This week just shows you how different it is. I mean, this week, more than any other event, even the U.S. Open and the PGA, which were played without fans, this week without the patrons is certainly different.
It's a great point. Rex Hoggard is joining us. He's at Augusta National. So, Rex, what about the course itself? How is the course playing today?
Tee to green, I think it's pretty much been the same of what we would find in April. It's wet. We had a lot of rain yesterday, but we get that in April. I don't think that's really that big of a deal. It's a long golf course. We all know that. You're seeing the differences, and you're seeing it a lot, actually, is you're seeing putts come up short. You're seeing guys miss on the high side. You're seeing long approach shots hit and stop. We all know that just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in April, even if they get a lot of rain. This golf course was built to play hard and fast and bouncy, and you just can't do that. Certainly can't do it this time of year. One of my least favorite things in the world is to talk about grass growing, but it has everything to do with grass growing and just being in November versus being in April.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. You know, he was the defending champ, but I thought that in a way, maybe this is an overstatement, but I thought in a way, because Tiger Woods had not played that much this year, Rex, and when he did play, he didn't play that well. He was almost an afterthought, and then he goes out and he has that great first round. But let me ask you this first. If we go back to earlier in the week, Tiger was coming into the tournament as the defending champ, but the focus was on Bryson and other guys. But Jack Nicklaus said that he was very emotional. I've never seen Tiger that way. That's when he hosted the Champions Dinner. What was your sense as to the kind of emotions that Tiger was feeling in the lead up to Thursday, and what do you think triggered those emotions?
I mean, even his emotions in his press conference, I mean, he actually fought back tears when he spoke to the media on Tuesday, and Tiger doesn't do that. I mean, he puts the competitive blinders on. He doesn't look back. He doesn't talk about what the greatest moments of his career is. He's just not there yet. And for him to get choked up talking about what happened seems like a lifetime ago, but it was just last year. what happened on that Sunday at Augusta to get that 15th major championship, I think it gives you a glimpse into exactly how much it meant to him. I mean, again, he doesn't talk about this. He doesn't allow himself to do this. But I think he's had time now to realize that, look, that might be it for me, and he's going to savor it. And certainly starting this week well probably gives him a lot of motivation, but you get the sense that he doesn't have anything pressing him. He doesn't feel like he's on the clock anymore, and that has everything to do with winning last year.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. So what about he goes out and he shoots a bogey-free 68 yesterday. As you were watching that unfold, what was your reaction? What did you think?
I mean, man, it was an easy round, too. I mean, that's what kind of threw you. And, again, going back to you pointed out, he hadn't played a lot since the restart in June. Before we went into pandemic, he'd missed a couple starts during the spring because of, you know, various aches and pains. And we all know that's an issue when it comes to Tiger Woods. So expectations were low. As you pointed out, if Tiger Woods can be under the radar, he was this week. And for him to go out and not just shoot the number, I mean, keep in mind, that is the best round he's ever shot. It ties the best round he's ever shot. And on the first day of this tournament, gives you an idea that, man, he is really comfortable because there was no stress at all. He came off the golf course. It didn't sound like he was angry. It seemed like, yep, everything is going according to plan. It was really amazing considering where he's at right now.
Like, so Rex, in your mind, how much of that is about the institutional knowledge that he has at Augusta National, and then how valuable is that to him?
I think it has to have everything to do with institutional knowledge, and he talked about it early in the week. And we see it. I mean, Bernhard Langer was on the leaderboard this morning, a 60-something-year-old guy. And you only get that over decades and decades of experience. And I thought it was going to be mitigated a little bit this year for the reasons that we talked about, that the greens and around the greens, they are different just because of the time of year. But he was able to do things yesterday that, look, the younger players who have won this year, let's say Colin Morikawa, who's the PGA Championship winner this year, they just don't understand where to miss, where to make putts, where to miss drives, all of those little things that he's acquired over the years. I think it had everything to do with that.
Rex Hoggard is joining us from Augusta. So, Rex, it's only one round, and there are three more, and it's a long way to go. Does it feel like Tiger can sustain this over the next 3 days?
I would be surprised. And, I mean, full disclosure, when we did our picks at the beginning of the week, I he would make the cut. I mean, you have to work really hard not to make the cut at this particular event. I just didn't see how he was going to put himself into contention. When he played in Los Angeles just a couple weeks ago, there was no aspect of his game that seemed like he was on the cusp. And that was different. I mean, if you go back to 2019 and the weeks leading up, he wasn't winning, but there were signs that his game was coming around, that his swing was starting to do what he needed it to do at Augusta National. There was none of that here. And there's that factor. And then there's also the guys that he would have to beat at this point. I mean, it's the cream of the crop. It's Dustin Johnson. It's Justin Thomas. It's all of these players that are on top of their game. I just don't see how he can sustain this.
Right. So, Rex, what about Bryson? There was so much hype on him coming into the Masters. Then he had that roller coaster of a first round. What did you take away from his round?
He probably focused on the wrong stuff. And look, I'm not one to second-guess a PGA Tour player. There's a reason why they're a PGA Tour player. But when you come into Augusta, even a November Masters, everybody knows that it is all about what you do on and around the greens, and that's where the focus is. I mean, if you sit and watch Tiger prepare for Masters Week, he's spending an amazing amount of time putting and chipping and trying to get a feel for the place. Bryson spent 3 days working on a 48-inch driver and sort of getting caught up and trying to hit the ball a long way, and he's been successful doing that this year. But at this particular test, I don't think that was the way to go. And he probably learned a very valuable lesson yesterday, that one, you can't be greedy at Augusta National, and two, it's not about what you do tee to green. It's about what you do when you get on the green.
All right, so that said, I'm still kind of fascinated by the guy and his approach and what he says and what he does. That said, do you get the sense that a number of other players are sick of hearing about and talking about Bryson?
Oh, there's eye rolls. Absolutely. There was a great moment. My colleague was out following Ryan Lavder. There was a moment on one of the tees where Bryson kind of goes into that jumping mode where it looks like he's about to go and fight a boxing match of 16 rounds. And he was playing with John Rahm, who's sort of kneeling by his bag, and he couldn't sort of choke back a smile or a laugh. It was, this is kind of silly at this point. And it works. And I am with you, Jim. I mean, Bryson is entertaining. For someone who has to write stories, I absolutely love it. But yes, there are some eye rolls when it comes to Bryson stuff.
Rex Hoggard is joining us for a few more moments. He is there at the tourney. So, Rex, what about Dustin Johnson? He finished his opening round at 7-under, then got to 10-under early in the second round. He came back a little bit. Overall, though, how does this course and these conditions fit his game?
I think it's pretty much perfect. I mean, he's the world number one, so I'm not quite sure there's too many courses that don't set up well for him. But if you look over the last couple of years, it seems like every time he got here, he was, if not the favorite, then number two on that list, simply because he does all the things you have to do well at Augusta National. He hits a high draw, he can absolutely smash it. And so I think when you look at where he was coming into this week and coming down with COVID-19 and having to miss a few weeks was actually, in a weird way, kind of good for him because it allowed him to show up this week fresh, and you can see it in his game. So I think everybody had him on top of their list for good reason.
Rex Hoggard is joining me. What about Rory? Rex, before you go, he finished off a rough first round today. He started his second round and is playing much better. How badly does he want to win this tournament, and what would that mean to him?
I mean, that gives him the career grand slam, and Rory is a history of the game. He knows this puts him in elite company. I mean, that is the best of the absolute best, and he knows what it means. That said, if he was ever going to fly under the radar, this was going to be the week, because as we just said, you had Tiger defending and Bryson doing Bryson things. And so I think he was sort of relishing the moment, and I don't think he's out of it, but certainly you get the impression watching Rory at a normal week, at a normal event, where he looks relaxed and he looks confident and the swing is fluid, as opposed to here where he seems to maybe squeeze a little bit too tight, because you can want something too bad.
So what do you think the final score is going to look like on Sunday, or should I ask, what will the final score look like on Monday?
Sunday. I think we'll catch up. Actually, I think with the conditions we have, it's actually going to be fall over the next couple of days, so it's going to get cool. You're going to end up with a little bit more windy conditions. The golf course is going to dry out. That being said, I predicted at the beginning of the week that 14-under was going to win, and I thought that was a little on the low side. I could see guys even going a little bit deeper than that because the greens are soft. And they can throw darts, and when you give PGA Tour players soft greens, they can score.
He is a GolfChannel.com senior writer. He is Rex number 7. You can follow him on Twitter at RexHoggerGC, and a good, good friend of the program. Rex, great job as always. Thank you very much for making time for us, and it's always good to have you on.
Thanks, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Big head bets. He's got a big ass head, and he likes to get down.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Perfectly describing James Kelly. Your head is writing checks that none of you can cash.
That's right.
The rest of you, man. Like, it's like the Macy's Day Parade, you know, when they have those gigantic blow-up floats that are floating down the street. That's James Kelly. But my man is smart. He's got a lot of intel up inside that head. So what we do every Friday is we let him pick games. If you do what he says, more often than not, that you will make money. We do this for entertainment purposes only. And if, in fact, you're going to bet, never bet more than you can afford to lose. Let's get at it. There's some good, good matchups this weekend. He's got his own Comrex line. That's how committed I am to this segment. He sounds mean. He sounds clean. He is the big head. JK, what's up?
What's up, Jim Rome?
Oh, dude. I can't believe you still sound amazing. For so long, you were on that normal cell phone. I can't believe how clean that sounds.
This is amazing line. Thank you for this, Comrex. I appreciate that part.
Thank you for having a big head.
Hey,
thank you for doing this on Fridays.
Great jungle anniversary segment, too, Jim.
It's a good day, right?
I think you could actually add Jeffrey Toobin getting fired to that segment. Did you hear the news about that?
Hey, big head, why don't you just stick to the script? Why don't you just stick to football games, all right? I don't need you to ask me if I saw Jeffrey Toobin getting fired and that we should add that to our list. Were you not listening when I said, make a decision, man? Are you one of them or are you one of us?
I mean, he did go all Reese McGuire with it on Zoom, so I thought
Kelly,
I was...
Kelly, are you done?
Because I'm done.
Are you having fun, James?
I'm
because
done.
I'm not. Dude, stop playing to the five idiots in the corner, all right? Just stick to doing what I brought you here to do. You're getting way too comfortable, man. Keep Reese McGuire's name out your mouth. All right, so let's get to this. Now, I love this matchup. I hope you do. Bills v. Cardinals. In fact, I love any game that features Kyler Murray because this is still the one guy that I would pay money to see. He is still, to me, JK, the most electric player in the NFL. I cannot take my eyes off this guy. I'm afraid I might miss something. Now, the Bills are 7-2. They laid an ass-kicking on the Seahawks. If you want it, you can have them and 2.5 points. Let me ask you, Head, do you want the points, and are you all in on the Bills yet?
I am now, Jim. I went against him last week, so I'm making up for it right now. I'm going to take the +2 at Arizona here, and everything you said about Kyler is true. This is actually the highest over under of the entire week at 56.5, so it should be a high-scoring game. Kyler has got some sneaky good MVP plays out there for people that like those odds, like at +3,000 odds for him to win the MVP. And honestly, his numbers this year compared to Lamar's last year, they're pretty similar. And especially with his, you know, beating people on the ground, he's averaging over 7 yards per carry. But I like the Bills, and it's because Arizona is actually allowing nearly 10 points more a game at home this season. In the last three games, Arizona is allowing over 400 yards given up on defense. So teams are throwing against the cards a lot, and Josh Allen bounced back last week. He was in a little rut, but he was big last week. The Bills' defense is showing up a touch of life lately, and that's all I need here. The Cards are just too damn inconsistent right now, Jim. Mafia +2.5.
All right, so, Head, was that so hard? Was that so hard? You didn't even have to mention Reese McGuire or Jeffrey Toobin, and you gave us a nice little bit of information on Kyler Murray being +3,000 for the MVP. I didn't know that. I like that. All right, another great matchup. Huge NFC West implications. Seattle at the Rams. Let me say, there is nothing more tired than Russ and cooking resets. That said, my guy has burned dinner a couple of times of late. That Seahawks pass defense is getting worse, not better. Josh Allen did shred them last week. So the question is, how is Jared Goff going to fare against it? In fact, maybe a better question would be, does Goff even need to shred it for them to win? I mean, there's a lot to like about the Rams in this spot, but do you like them enough to lay 1.5?
I do, Jim. I'm going to lay -1.5 here. I'm going to take the Rams because they are a much different story at home than they are on the road. At home, they're allowing an NFL lowest 12 points per game. They're 3-0 there. They should be getting Jalen Ramsey back, too, for DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Now, as far as Goff, he has been awful at times this year. He was terrible against Miami. He should bounce back against this Seattle defense. The secondary, like you just said, it's the worst in the NFL. Peter and Ken Norton Jr. have done a terrible job with this defense. They do have a little bit more talent than they're playing to, but they shouldn't be allowing 455 yards a game. And Sean McVay, he feasts on bottom five defenses. Since he's been a head coach, he's 6-0 against them and averaging over 40 points a game. 2 weeks to prepare. I'm taking the Rams -1.5 at home.
Big Head, Rams -1.5 at home. All right. Then you've got the Bucks v. Carolina. A truly disastrous game for TB43 and the Bucks against the Saints. Super Bowl contenders do not get hammered by 5 touchdowns. Brady has never looked worse than he did last week, so you figure he's got to bounce back. That said, though, while Carolina's lost 4 in a row, they're in every single game. They're really well coached. I like them. Do you like them, and is 5.5 points enough to get you to bite on Matt Rhule and his crew?
It's not, but I agree with everything on Rhule. I think he's done a great job with that roster. I think he's maxed it out, and you touched on something there with those 4 straight losses. Now, they've lost all 4 of those by 8 points or less. I just think without Christian McCaffrey, because he's not going to play this Sunday, even with him, I don't think they could run against this Bucs D. So that means the GOAT v. the spread, Teddy Bridgewater, has to be big. And if you make him one-dimensional, I think the Bucs defense could step up. Obviously, Drew Brees and his noodle arm lit him up for 4 touchdowns last week. But all season long, they've played a lot better. So I'm going to go with them. I'm also going with the old dude, Tom Brady, bouncing back. They have problems on O. Talent, isn't it? I think it was rock bottom on Sunday night. I hope it was rock bottom. I still believe they will figure it out, and I think Carolina's secondary is not good. So let's go Tampa -5.5 at Carolina.
Bucks -5.5. All right, so we've got the Masters underway. I know that you had success hitting the U.S. Open on Friday of this year. Is that your same strategy with the Masters? And if so, who do you like?
It is, and I hit it this AM, and I actually hit 3 instead of 2 this time. I hit the smartest dumb guy in the course, Dustin Johnson, but I got him at 450, plus 450. I know a couple people who have got him around 800 or 900, so I'm a little late to that. I am going to hedge because I'm just a little bit greedy. So Noah's at plus 450. I'm also going with Xander Schauffele at plus 1150 because outside of Rahm, he's the best player in the world without a major. He finished second in the Tour Championship. He's finished second in the Masters a year ago. I think that's a good value play, and I also went with the chubby fella, Patrick Reed. When Dustin Johnson was on a roll earlier today and he got to minus 10, Patrick Reed, he is at plus 3,300 before the round started. He played great yesterday, Jim. He won it in 2018, and this year, after the restart, he's had four top 10 finishes. So I'm going with chubby Patrick Reed, Xander, and Nose.
Schauffele. Tomato. Right. Dude, you're getting way too comfortable. I don't think you need... Listen, I've done this 30 years. Do you hear me calling Dustin Johnson the Nose?
No, no.
Then why are you doing it?
Well, I mean, that's his nickname. I mean, quit doing...
That's his stuff. Nickname.
Yeah.
His nickname, I think, is DJ.
DJ, yeah. Well,
anyway,
that's
what's popping Twitter?
Plus
now it's just getting awkward and cringy, man. You're getting way too comfortable. Dude, is there anything that we missed on aside from those three picks for the Masters, those three NFL games? Are you looking at anything else?
I'm looking at the Browns. Obviously, that COVID news, I'm still seeing it on the board right now, but it's a dangerous one because it looked like the easiest one all week against the Houston Texans. I saw it minus three earlier in the week. It's dangerous to play because it looks so easy, but I did hit it. I just think that...
Of course it's dangerous, dude. You're in the danger zone.
Right. And they should win that game. I mean, the run game should get going. Houston's defense is terrible. Deshaun Watson, he's actually been great. He's been really, really good, and he's not getting enough credit, but it's just that defense is terrible.
Watson?
You could run it against him. Watson? And
Watson?
Even since Romeo Crennel took over for Bill O'Brien, the defense is still terrible, so I went with the Browns minus three. So that's
all right. So
one.
Really quickly, Big Head, if they want to find you directly on social, and most of them already have, where do they find you?
At James, the number four for forehead, Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y.
Big Head, definitely nice job. Appreciate the picks. Good luck with it.
Thanks, Jim.
Let's make some money. Let's be entertained. Deion Dawkins is my guest. Deion, great to have you back. How are you?
What's up, man? How you doing, Jim?
Good, dude. Good. Great to hear your voice. So you're getting ready for Arizona, Deion. On Sunday, you've won three straight. You're in first place in the division. Listen, I know you, so I know you're not satisfied. But how good does it feel to be a Buffalo Bill right about now? And what's the attitude like among the players?
Well, number one, it definitely feels great. You know, it feels like what it should feel like when you trust the process and when you trust what the coaches are preaching. And as far as for this battle, we are extremely excited, and we know that we have work to be done, and we're going to go in there and we're going to have our mindset of what we're going to do, and we're going to execute.
Deion Dawkins is my guest. You know, you mentioned the process and having a belief and a trust in the coaches. I mean, no matter what, Deion, you know you need this. But when you go through a stretch like you guys went through in October, when you lost to Tennessee on a Tuesday night, and then you lost to Kansas City the following Monday, that's a pretty challenging stretch, and you could see where if guys did not buy in, they might let go of the rope, but that's not what happened. How much of that is about a belief in the process and the coaches? Like, how did you get squared away as quickly as you did after that?
Well, that is all what it was. It was really just trusting in what, like, they were preaching, but that just falls on the players that have been here. Just to continue to preach and just let guys understand that this is all a part of in the game. For all of the young guys that we have playing, for the young guys like that are on scout team, for everybody who's doing their part, it's just to and relay like that message is, it's extremely hard to go undefeated. We don't need to go undefeated to win a Super Bowl. We don't need to go undefeated to win a conference. We just have to be best at what we do. And then when things go wrong, we have to understand and tone in on what exactly caused us to fail and then flip that into winning. And that's kind of what we did. Like, we just went in there and we respected the film. We respected our mistakes and we learned from it.
I like
it. And we just kept growing.
Bills tackle Deion Dawkins joining us. Sorry to jump in there. I do. I like that, though. That's exactly what it is. So then you've got your quarterback, Josh Allen. He played Sunday, Deion, shortly after the passing of his grandmother. And then he goes out and he throws for more than 400 yards, four touchdowns. Like, you were really effusive in your praise of him afterwards. But to you, what does that say, that performance? What's that say about him as a player and a person?
Well, number one, it definitely shows the world that God is real and good things happen to good people. And it also shows that Josh is a warrior. Just simply that, you know, most guys that were connected to somebody like he was to his grandma would have sat out and took the time to refocus on his life. But he said he has a team to lead, and he went out there and he did his thing. And, you know, and he got hit, he ran, he did his thing. And I can't be more proud of a kid, and I can't be any more proud to be his left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, like, my sense from talking to you in the past is, obviously, you're going to bust your ass no matter what. I mean, no matter who you're protecting, you've got a job to do, and you'll do it to the best of your ability. But when you've got a young guy like that, and he is a warrior, the way you point out, are you even more fired up to protect him and do what you can to make sure that he's covered and safe and clean?
Yes, and absolutely. Josh is a caring person. Like, literally, he calls us all day long. He calls, he sends memes, he talks to us, we play video games. And even though Josh is Josh, but I still, like, look at him like, as, man, like, this guy can be my younger brother. And I would die for him. Literally, I would stand on that front line for him. And every play, I have that mindset of, I want to keep my quarterback clean, and I want to make sure that this kid is in the best position for him to shine and do what he plans on doing.
It's incredible praise. Deion Dawkins is joining us, and that comes from somebody who is a team captain. You're a team captain. You're a huge part of the team's success so far this year. Back in August, it was announced that you and the team had agreed to a contract extension. What did that deal mean to you, and how much pride is there in knowing that you're going to be in Buffalo for quite some time?
Yeah, well, it honestly meant the world to me, because I'm far and from perfect, and I'm far from where I want to be in my career yet, and I'm still learning. I'm not young, but I'm not old, and I'm still learning. And for an organization to believe in me and look at me in the way and that they did, with saying that we could win for multiple years and many years with Deion Dawkins, it meant the world. And with the organization and like this, I would do anything for, just because they showed and said exactly what they meant, and they take care of family, and it's a family team, a family like organization. And McDermott brought me in, and I'm here, and I'm gonna be here, and I'm nothing but thankful to be here. And it's Mafia for life.
Against my guest, you know, it's curious to me when guys get big deals. You know, I don't know, if you work really hard and you grind out and then you earn that, a lot of people naturally, I think it's human nature, think that that's my reward. I can take my foot off the gas right now. Do you have to fight that off on any level, or do you pound the pedal now that you got that money? Does it motivate you even more?
Yes, so it motivates me even more, but I can definitely see where people get that mindset of, let me just coast, because they're paid. Like, they have nothing to, like, worry about in life, just a reputation in the NFL. But for and myself, it's definitely pedal to the metal, because I'm one of those guys that want to be great, and I want to be one of the greats. You know, like, coming in, like, people doubt it. Like, Deion's not a tackle. He's not a right tackle. He's not a left tackle. He's definitely not a left tackle, but he can possibly play guard. And then I come in there and I play left tackle, which is one of the hardest positions in football, and I'm doing it. And I feel like that, and I'm doing it well enough for somebody to believe in me, to keep me around. But definitely have that foot to the pedal. I just have to just keep growing. You know, like, I see myself somewhere great in the future, but far from it, and I just got to just keep pounding away.
Right. It seems to me like it's to fully understand where you are right now and what you've accomplished, we have to once again remind ourselves of where you started and how far you've come. Right. Like when you and I spoke earlier this year, we talked about your early days of growing up in New Jersey, the impact that you had on the people around you. We talked about your snow days because shoveling was how you could make money back in the day. When you think about those days, man, the kid who was grinding in the cold just to make some money, you think about that. How much pride then is there in that contract extension that you just signed, given where you started?
Well, that is literally where everything thing lays, because I grinded in the snow to make a dollar, and I'm literally still grinding in cold weather, making a dollar every day. And Buffalo is far from warm, so I see it exactly in the same as when I was younger. It's just get out there and get it done and keep moving. And just continue to lead by example.
All right, so really quickly, what came out of this, among other things, back then when you were shoveling, the snowman was born, and you dropped some new gear at snowgear.com. What is the gear like? How do folks get it?
Yes, so definitely drop gear. I just launched hoodies, which people are absolutely loving, and I'm thankful for it. But they can get it at snowgear.com, and it's spelled snow just like snow, SHNOWGEAR.com. And literally, I'm pretty sure that if you go on there, you'll be shocked at the color selections, and hopefully it'll grab your attention and grab your heart.
And
of course, and the proceeds, a part of the proceeds go to the Punt and Foundation, which supports pediatric cancer. So, you know, it's a helping hand.
That's great. That's super. Snowgear.com. That's outstanding. Unfortunately, this not as much so. And I hate to end on this, Dion, with so many good things going on. But I want to address something that came up with your teammate, Cody Ford. A few weeks back during an interview, he was asked, who would have a better second career as a model, him or you?
Yeah.
My man, his response was, quote, I'm not going to sit here and call the man ugly, but I don't think GQ is going to call him before me.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to that, big dog?
Yeah, so me and Cody actually had a couple of conversations on that note, but Cody knows. Matter of fact, Cody knows who the swag dog is, and I respect the kid. You know, he's hungry. He understands that when it comes to the and the fits and the GQ looks and the style, it's definitely me, and I'm always gonna stand on my stool than his. So, sorry, Cody, but got a little bit of time to improve yourself, brother.
I got that. Now he schnows. Now the entire world schnows who the swag dog is. It's Deion Dawkins. You got Buffalo 7-2. They're in first in the AFC East, and they're at Arizona Sunday, which is a big game. Deion, I appreciate you, and I always appreciate our talks, man. Thanks so much.
Always, man. You have a wonderful day. Stay safe and continue doing what you're doing.
You too,
I'm
Deion.
A huge fan, and keep it icy, brother.
Dude, you're on. You know, I love that song, so I thought I'd lay out and just play it for you on a Monday. What's cracking? That is my favorite song. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a good weekend. Nice to be with you. Let's get this thing going.
Yeah! Touchdown, Chargers!
There's both feet. It is not even close, DJ.
Ruling on the field has been changed.
Show me your lightning bolt.
Game over. Raiders rule. Chargers suck. Good night now.
Good night. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it.
What is Ohio State?
No, what is Auburn? You're obviously not a
Rest
big football
Rest in peace,
fan.
AT. Thanks for the memories. May the next host be as gracious as you were, and may he or she hate wrong answers as much as you did.
Montgomery is hit and knocked loose.
The Bears' offense was garbage. The second biggest lie in life is you are what your record says you are. My ass, because their record said they were 5-1. We're getting caught up with Wesley Woodyard.
The NFC South still belongs to Drew Brees. I had friends in the locker room talking about Tampa Bay. They were who we thought they were.
We
didn't let them off the hook.
And we let them off the hook.
Email. 2-7 is the perfect time to begin the big push. Regards, people who start their 401k in their 50s. Oh, there you go, Charles Schwab. You're one of those guys with that passive income, right? You make money when you sleep, eh, Steve? Tom Allen.
Well, there's a reality. And if you don't believe in yourself, why should anybody else?
I actually eat Chipotle about 4 or 5 times a day.
This is not a
Twitter. We're going to talk about Chipotle. Why not just shine a Rex bat signal behind you?
Bloodstains in your underwear.
Janet will get like one donut hole, and I'll get like the biggest donut. I'll order both. I'll go, yeah, I'll have that donut hole, and she'll have that big, gigantic bear claw over there. Jimmy!
R-S-T-U-V.
When he gets to the station, and they ask him to submit a blood sample, he drops this gem. I will not comply with your test. I don't trust it, brother. How are you going to trust this guy to control or manage anybody else when he can't control or manage himself? I said, take this phone number. Write this phone number down and keep it in your wallet. 1-800-
For the touchdown!
Eyes on the prize, fellas. Now is not the time to start trying or showing professionalism. You came this close to choking and winning. Do your job and man down.
What?
Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
Aaron looked at me and was like, do you like the play call? And I was like, yeah, throw it to me. And he's like, all right, left the huddle. And sure enough, ball was in the air.
Dalvin Cook joining us. Or are you the best running back in the NFL now?
No, I thought that about myself. You know, I always think highly of myself. I push myself so hard. I work hard. And I think I'm still getting better.
15 years ago today, I missed that last step. I was rolling around on the marble. Alley Cat was mocking me. I'm on the floor rolling around. Ah! Tyler Lockett's joining us.
Whenever you're actually doing a play, nothing really seems spectacular. It's not until you see the highlight reel where you look at it and you're like, wow, how did I do that? Man, that was just God. That's all I could say because I was like, I couldn't tell you how I did that.
Email.
We love TLR's ability to figure out launch angles for his Chrysler LeBaron. Signed the Sox.
There you go. No doubt about this one. This may make it over the scoreboard.
Talia Tagovailoa joining us. What kind of emotions were you feeling when you were watching your brother?
Yes, sir. It was very cool, you know, to see him come back. And I'm just happy to see him have fun. That was the biggest thing for me.
No K-Cups.
I don't like coffee.
No K-Cups. It sounds like I'm passionate about coffee. It's because I'm passionate about coffee. Take a run at coffee. You're taking a run at me. It's like a reason to go. I'm not having it, Hood. Bruce Feldman's newest book is called Flip the Script.
First of all, I think Ryan Day's temperament, he's not one of these coaches who the old school mentality or my way or the highway. My way or the highway. Yes, college players.
Is it because your guy Tiger Woods is playing as well as he is, or is there something else going on here?
It's a combination of things, Jim. Thank you for asking. I am.
Listen to you, dude. Listen to you. Listen how fast you're talking, how hyped up you are.
I'm out of my mind. I'm out of my mind.
Easy, P. Carroll.
On this mushroom coffee.
Not shroom coffee.
No.
That's kind of a weekend thing.
Kenny Blakeney. Kenny, good to have you on. How are you?
What's up, Jim? How you doing, man? It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your show. Kenny, I'm going to fire your ass today.
Big head bets. It's a good day, right?
I think you could actually add Jeffrey Toobin getting fired to that segment. You hear the news about that?
He is Rex Hoggard.
November Masters. It feels just like April. Matter of fact, Cody Snows. Who the swag dog is.
War Scofro.
All right, good here for you, Jim. Stay up, Jungle.
Appreciate you, Jim.
Library of Buttholes.
Butthole. It is remarkable.
Or fat porn.
Oh, Todd.
Your ass better pull up.
Like you ever played the position.
No, thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you. I appreciate you always. Andrew Bogus, self-glossing himself, the boss.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Some sort of a little silver donga or dingleberry thing.
I like Crete.
How's it going?
Brown paper bag.
What do they know?
Peter Goldfinger.
We love you out. That's very kind. Thank you.
God